Hi, class. In thinking about Saland and the highlights from the reading, I think a lot about the differentiation piece. If there's one thing I have heard so many times over the course of my many years as a special educator, is that general education teachers have not been really immersed in understanding what differentiation is. And I think to myself, at this point, I think everyone needs to know how to differentiate. And it's everyone's responsibility to be able to do that. And what is that? What is it to differentiate? So when I think about differentiation, I think about how special educators have been doing this all their career. And it's really a fancy name for something that special educators have been doing ever since the invention of the individualized education plan. We have always taken a goal area and decided and worked backward from that in terms of how do we get to where we need to go and build the scaffolding needed to get a student from one point to another. And we have worked in classrooms where we have multiple levels of ability. You think back to the one-room schoolhouse and all of the abilities, all of the grade levels in one classroom. Lessons had to be differentiated. Students were working on a variety of different levels in different subject areas, and students had differing abilities. And so when you think of a whole class, a heterogeneously grouped class with students who have higher abilities than others, then you need to have a lesson that hits all of those points, that has those kinds of attributes that everyone needs to learn. And then some will learn in a deeper way, and some will need to be retaught, and some will need additional practice. And those groupings and the differentiation that occurs in a classroom needs to be fluid and ever-changing, because students will be moving in and out of that differentiation at any given time. And it really needs to look like that in an inclusive classroom, right? Because you're really thinking about how you're grouping students and what they need. So someone who needs a more intensive differentiation or scaffolding piece in a math lesson may be a high flyer in the reading area, in reading comprehension, for example. And their lesson in the reading workshop may look very different than if you're working in a math workshop with that same student. And so all teachers need to be able to have that skill set. And oftentimes I hear it as an excuse of why, you know, a general education teacher cannot accommodate for a student and doesn't know how to differentiate this particular lesson. That is everyone's work to do, not just the special educator. And so that comes into play when, you know, we've been talking about friend and co-teaching and collaboration and planning. That differentiation piece, you know, and I was speaking to you about being the model for what you want to see. It's so important to do that as well. With your general education teachers, of giving some examples, say, for example, in a science lesson, of how a lesson like that could be differentiated. And, you know, you hope that in a school that is inclusive and working towards building that kind of momentum, that the administration would be looking for ways to get all teachers working on ways to differentiate a particular unit of study or subject area when you're doing curriculum articulation, for example, or when you're working on lesson plans. So really, I think a lot about how that is just a natural process. You, in your transition plans and your IEPs, have demonstrated in our classroom discussions, have demonstrated that you understand that piece. You understand that learners come to the classroom needing different lessons. They need different techniques, different types of technology to use in their classrooms and the inclusive environment, and to access what the lesson is and what the learning is, and you know, we also need diversity in how we're expecting kids to respond and how we assess them. And so, you know, I think not just in terms of differentiation of the curriculum, we have to think also, as Salin talks about, assessing what it is that students are doing and whether or not the way we're approaching lessons and units of study and the way in which we're co-teaching, if this is working, right? And we think about not only reflecting as professionals together in the co-teaching relationship or just reflecting as a special educator in general, but also in thinking about how you can work together to, you know, problem solve and troubleshoot things that are going on in the curriculum. So how do we do that? We do that through assessing. And so Salin talks about the two major types of assessment. One is formative and the other summative. And I remember those by formative being your kind of assessing as the learning is forming. And that can be through exit tickets. It could be through little pop quizzes. It could be through different games like Kahoot and things like that. It could be posts on a Padlet. It could be any type of response that a student has and a way to respond, sometimes on sticky notes, on chart paper. You could be doing a math lesson with whiteboards and having students respond individually and holding those whiteboards up, and you can take a scan quickly across the room, and you know who has it and who doesn't, who may need some additional teaching and who is ready to move on. And then summative assessment is really summing it all up, right? It's the end of the chapter test. It's the higher stakes assessment, like MCAS and RICAS, and thinking about kind of the end of the semester projects or the big presentations or, you know, the band performance and those bigger tests and quizzes that are graded in a different way. Those are really summative and taking all of those formative pieces and putting them together to almost summarize the learning in a larger high stakes tool. So Salin talks about using assessments to our benefit to be able to evaluate whether or not what we're doing is working for students. Also in Salin, we talk about assistive technology, the use of technology, both low tech and high tech. Low tech, devices and technology are very simple things. There are some examples in the slide deck for you about that. But if you think about the reading trackers, slant boards, pencil grips, you think about paper that has highlighted lines, those are all low-tech kind of everyday different things that you can use, different materials that you can use to help learners. And then there are higher-tech assistive technology devices. In that category would be your communication devices, your picture communication systems, your Mayor Johnson symbols and little, you know, visual charts and checklists and things, those kinds of things, depending on whether or not they're on a computer. Some of them are very low tech. You know, you have some that are just, you know, kind of Velcro charts and things like that. That would be in the low tech. But if you're using technology, iPad apps, smart boards, if you're using any type of technology like that, that's usually a little more high tech. We have some very sophisticated augmentative communication devices that students use, and they're very helpful for students who don't have communication or verbal communication to be able to communicate with their teachers and demonstrate their preferences and their responses. So technology has come a very long way in a short time. And we're always using those tools in our inclusive classroom to make sure that students are accessing the curriculum and really getting a comprehensive education. So I wanted to highlight those for you, and as well as get you thinking about students from cultural and linguistically different backgrounds. There is a lot in Salin and in the slide deck, just kind of getting you thinking about, our English language learners, students that have a different layer of need, thinking about how we can best support them along with our students with disabilities. And sometimes those categories overlap a little bit, and how we do that, how we present material, for example, how we, use visual material, how we use spacing and text size, how we use visuals in the classroom. There are several examples of anchor charts, which I just love. The ones that I gave you in the slide deck are examples that are more like resource anchor charts, but the best anchor charts are student ones that they come up with, and you can do that together as a class and hang them up and make sure that you're referring back to them all the time so students learn how to use those things in the classroom. And those are really helpful techniques for all learners. And we'll be talking a little bit more, too, about just the different types of pieces that we need to remember, in terms of our teaching with technology and with thinking about how students learn best, thinking about, as I said, the spacing, thinking about using less information on a page, thinking about how we present material to students, present information in the classroom, how we chunk material, how we give students step-by-step explicit instruction on where to start a task and how we know we are progressing in a task and how we know when we're finished. And the other piece I just wanted to highlight in this section was kind of thinking about the way we're presenting, again, materials to students instructionally. So some of the reading talks about digital stories, use of items like this, which is a little podcast with a QR code. Your Padlet can also come up with a QR code for students to respond to easily. Things that we can use, like, as I already mentioned, interactive software like a smart board, but captioning, that's a really nice tool to use for students who have difficulty, really kind of tuning in to what's being said. They also need to see it. So Salin really gets us thinking about accessibility and what we need to do for our students and what's out there for us to choose from to help them really learn in the best way possible.